You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Sitting here so excited. I'm sitting with three of the most talented women I have ever met, and I'm not kidding. So welcome, and thank you for being the ladies who lunch today, because we don't do it that often, do we?
We do not.
It's kind of an old world thing, right?
Love it.
So, first of all, thank you for being here. This is the first time that I've had to have notes because of just the powerhouses that I'm, you know, the work you've done. It's just, I'm a little palpitating right now, but Mary Mitchell Campbell, this is kind of a reunion of sorts for us.
Yes.
Because I haven't seen you in a while, but certainly since 10 Cents a Dance with John Doyle.
Yes, where you played saxophone.
Yeah.
Donna played the saxophone.
They sent me to Juilliard.
To learn how to play,
how to play the saxophone.
I always respected horn players, but now I really do, to learn how to.
And you sent you to Juilliard? That's excellent.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to go to Juilliard and learn
that's
saxophone.
That's John, right? No, that's Mary and John Doyle, who, if you've ever worked with him, it's just an incredible thing.
It is.
And I have to tell you, I had to take notes the first time because of all the work, and I'm just going to catch up a little bit. Because you're working on For the Girls with Kristen Chenoweth
right
now.
Yeah, Kristen and I are going to be.
And The Prom, which is a show I loved. Mean Girls conducting, Tuck Everlasting, Fighting Neverland, Big Fish, Company. Now, when I first saw you, did you see Company, the John Doyle version? Well, and Raoul?
Was that the one with Raoul?
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah. Fabulous.
I was very subjective, you know, being in the original, I went, how are they going to do this? Because it's, you know, it's not 25 musicians anymore most of the time, right?
No.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But it was eight musicians?
In Company?
In Company.
We had like 12 cast members, and they all had to play different things.
Right.
They switched instruments all around.
But you had a group of musicians on the side, right?
No, just the actors.
What? Okay. then this, because
yeah,
the arrangements,
exciting.
Because I didn't know you then, and when I heard those arrangements, I went, this is fantastic. The feeling tone, what you brought to that score, and I know it so well, and it was and you got award for that, of course.
Thank you.
I'd like to see it again. Sometimes I saw it the first time, and I went, you know what, let's go see that again, but then you can't. Because it's gone.
But it's coming back.
I know, but it'll be different.
Yes, that's right.
Exactly.
It looks very different. Okay, so I'm going to... Beth?
Yes.
One of the things I love about doing this is that I can say to you in person, congratulations and what a year you've had.
Thank you so
much.
From
the prom.
It was really special.
And coming out, I mean, for all the things you've done. I mean, I was right there just cheering you on like everybody else because your presence, this fantastic voice, and you seize the stage and the character.
Thank you.
And it's just...
You made me cry.
Oh, my God. It's just wonderful. And
thank
to see
you.
That kind of... Even though we kind of downplay, if you've been in show business more than 5 years, you try to downplay the awards so that you can be the worker bee that you called yourself, which I relate to. But sometimes it's really great to see, you know, that... And was 42nd Street your first show?
Mm-hmm. The original company, not the original cast, but the original company. And then I wonder how many other people have done this, have had the privilege to be old enough to do the revival.
Yes.
And to play the old roles, as I made my Broadway debut as Anytime Annie. And I wish they'd sent me to Juilliard to learn to tap. Because I had to learn it kind of all by myself. And it's a skill that I'm really glad I did learn because thankfully...
You'll never forget it,
I will never forget it. My mother sent me to Betty Kovac School of Dance in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, North Carolina.
And I took 4 years of tap at a very young age, so I kind of knew the vocabulary.
Right.
But then I had to...
And work your ass off to
I
get that.
I worked my ass off. And, you know, now I'm really glad I can tap. I'd rather not do it right now. But if I had to, I could pull back across the Sardi's floor.
And then Mamma Mia. I have to refer to this. And just every
Drowsy Chaperone.
Oh my God! Yes.
That's okay. That's one I'm really proud of. Yeah.
And when I saw you in the prom, it's like, did you see the prom, Teresa?
I did. I loved it.
Thank you.
I came backstage and you didn't know me, but I'm friends with Brooks. And so I was like telling everybody as an anonymous person how great it was. I just thought it was great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're a friend with Brooks?
I am a friend. I'm friends with Brooks.
Just kidding. I adore him. And watch, and everybody was great. And seeing it, I couldn't help but think, what was that room like in rehearsal?
Oh, my gosh.
Did you laugh?
It was a lot. Yeah, it was sometimes really hard. And that was part of the what was so great about the show and its passion and how close we were together, but how we all felt so safe in the room that we could literally come in with the creative team and the cast and throw everything we had up against the wall and see what stuck and not be afraid of anything and trust each other. And it's really, really challenging to be in a room with Brooks and Chris and Angie and Josh Lehman and all our cast and not laugh most of the day, which I also think served the storytelling as well. It was probably the happiest year of my life.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That emanated from the stage.
Oh, good. Because
the
it
love
was
backstage.
Really truthful.
You can't, it comes through,
Right, Mary Mitchell?
I thought it was, we had a lot of fun.
Sometimes we just have to go, okay, people, stop laughing. Everybody, let's just get on task and see if we can figure out how to end this number.
It's great.
Cadillac of problems.
Now, Teresa, so I'm just so honored that you're here.
Thank you.
The work that you have done, I mean, you are the major voice for our theater, and not just this country, but the world. I honestly believe that.
Awesome.
I do believe it. And then, you know, it's like I'm Googling very superficially, and then I had no idea, because I've seen some of the plays and I've loved it. I mean, Alan Rickman is one of my favorite actors, and Janet McTeer. And then I read about all of the plays. I mean, now over what? 30?
This one, actually, every now and then I count them.
Yeah,
just to
I couldn't count.
How many are there? So I don't know actually how many in general there are, but this one that we're doing up at MCC, Seared with Raul Esparza and Krista Rodriguez, is the 19th one I've had off Broadway or on Broadway.
Wow.
So I know it's a lot.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's a lot.
That's amazing.
I'm like, bring it on, man. What else?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
that's amazing.
So I do feel honored by that in a way, you know, like it's a body of work. And
let me ask you a question, because I was reading some comments and everything. You are the most Broadway produced female playwright. Now,
yeah, this is, it's a weird,
are you
it's very specific and weird.
What
it's
is
like
that?
Straight plays. Everybody always goes, because you guys are all musical theater. People look at me and go, have you ever done a musical? And I'm like, you know, not really. I wrote one that we're still trying to figure out how to get it done. I think it's very beautiful with Kim Sherman. Do you guys know Kim Sherman?
Yeah, I love
Kim Sherman. The great Kim Sherman. But it's big, and so we haven't had any luck getting that done. But that's the only one I've ever, other than that, I write straight plays. I mean, I've always, that was my dream, was to write plays. I wanted to, like, be Chekhov or Arthur Miller. That's just my instrument sort of stands there.
So you always had that affinity to
I just never... I don't know. I just never moved into... Every now and then someone says, you should write a musical. And I'm like, oh, really? It seems like a lot of work.
Also, the high part of the moments.
Yeah. I'm always
Neil Simon didn't like that.
I know. I was like, wait a minute. So, like, my best stuff, you're going to hand over to a composer.
And someone's going to
turn it into a song.
Wait a minute.
Wait. That doesn't... Yeah, right? So I've had 4 plays on Broadway... And I'm a woman, and they're plays. I think that's what the deal is. And that nobody's done that since, like, Lillian Hellman. Wow.
Yeah,
so that's why it's such a weird...
So it's a...
It's like, yes, that's great. I'm really proud.
But is
it's
there a part of
weird,
you... Yeah, is there a part of you that goes, do we have to do the gender thing?
Right.
Can't we just... You know,
well,
is that,
you know, I'm
it's
so...
It's important, I guess, right now.
Listen, you know how it is. You, like, live with it your whole life. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you just go...
Okay.
Whatever. Fine. You know, yeah, I kind of feel that way. And I'm really grateful that Me Too happened. It did change the discussion because I, you know, I got some really crazy reviews over the years where it was like, what did they think they saw? And meanwhile, everybody else saw the play that was, you know what I mean? So now I think that there is a more of a sense of like trying to understand, you know, I've always tried to speak from like my point of view, you know, sort of, right. Which is a different point of view than other points of views in the.
Now, was Spike Heels your first play?
It was my first play in New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, and I mean, I had to stop writing the awards.
Yeah, let's
down,
hear all
too,
those 19.
You know?
Let's
I know. I mean, it's like 1990.
What year was
I had five brothers and sisters, and my mom used to go, we're just about blah, blah, blah.
I do. I call my children my dog's names. It's like, Louie, Tony, what the hell is your name? Sam, get in here.
What we're up against? When was that?
That was a couple years ago. I actually wrote that back when I wrote Spike Heels. It was, you know, like 1992. And nobody ever did it. And then they just did it. And it did happen like during, you know, it was one of those things where it was about women in the workplace and what happens. Mm-hmm. And nobody would touch it. And then all of a sudden they decided they wanted to do it up there at the Women's Project. And Jenna Siegel, who's a wonderful advocate for female artists, she's a producer who really wants to stand, you know, and get women's stories out there told by female creators, you know, because a lot of times, like, they go, I'm always like, wait a minute, there, you know, there are no women on the creative team of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, come on, and, you know, and like Tootsie, I was like, wait a minute, I mean, that's not to say anything about these wonderful artists, but it does feel like that there's still a plenty of room to grow
and there's
in terms
need,
of,
yeah, the yeah. need to make an effort sure. now to make yeah. sure that it's
that there are
balanced.
More, anyway, so that's, so that actually happened with what we're up against that nobody, they were all kind of like, I don't know. I couldn't figure out what the problem was. I think they thought I was making it up or something. And so then we were in the middle of producing it when Me Too like hit and everybody went, oh, you're not making it. I was like, no, none of us are making this up. This is actually accurate. It's cinema verite.
You know? Yes. Yep. You know, when one of the shows we were talking about being a girl growing up in the 50s, Midwestern, I came to New York with, you know, observing and realizing that I had to survive by not being forthright, but my way was, because of the way I was raised, that I had to kind of maneuver, negotiate things to protect myself. And I never liked it, I just thought that's the way it is, and I don't like it, but, you know, but I kept myself safe.
I admire you deeply. I'm direct to a fault. You know, I'm like when it's just my
great,
DNA. I don't know.
That is.
You know, like, anyway, I do admire
and
you
also,
deeply.
And also, speaking of that, you were like another award that jumped out at me was, here we go.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Thank you so much.
Newsweek.
Take nice.
Look at that. Isn't that nice?
Thank you.
Okay. Wow.
Thank you. I know, right?
I'm going to change my
look
order.
Look what you did.
Thank you so much.
They look amazing.
I know. So bon appetit.
Thank you.
You know,
Newsweek.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. I hadn't heard of this before, but 150. You were one of the 150 most fearless women in the world.
Whoa!
And wow. I know it was like a amazing. While ago too. Though I'm like, I'm on it again. That's I'm the one who goes. I'm greedy. I want to see company again. And I'm like, get that award again. Do you know what I mean? Because it was a while ago, but
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was sort of great when that happened.
Okay, I want to ask about. So I want to kind of throw something in the middle of the table, not the food. A kind of a question, but to do it, I want to illustrate it by this. I was thinking about when I was interviewing Jerry Mitchell once, who was a wonderful director, as you know, and he was generous to give me this interview. And I said, so when did you really know that you wanted to do what you do? Because that's endlessly fascinating
to
me. Why we do what we do. Right. And it doesn't always happen at the same time for people's journey. You know, it goes all over the place or starts later or whatever, you know, the connection you make with yourself. And he said, I remember the day very well. I was sitting in Paw Paw, Michigan, in the, at my, at the, wow. On the kitchen table with my mother, and I said, I'm going to be on Broadway, and nobody's going to stop me.
Wow.
And how old was he? Just five.
Whoa. Five?
Wow.
And I love That's that. I mean, fabulous. I couldn't speak.
That's pretty amazing.
That, yeah. Five. And I just thought, and, you know, when I thought about it, the fact that he was there making that pronouncement with his mother.
In Paw Paw.
That supportive, that home base, mm-hmm. the support, he, you know, was assertive that mm-hmm. way as a kid. You know, it makes sense to me.
Now, but that's impressive.
Does anyone metaphorically have that a moment where you recognized?
Okay, well, I had a moment when I was 16 because I had always wanted to be a writer. I was the one who was like, I'm 6 years old, I'm going to be a writer.
Wait, can I ask where you were born?
Yeah, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati,
okay, Ohio. And then
so you were like 10, I read that when you started writing them.
I was six.
Six.
I was really
six.
It was like pre-conscious.
Get those facts.
You know, they actually my aunt had a story that I wrote when I was, she saved it. When she died, we found it in her things, this little story I wrote when I was six. She was my mother's twin sister, so she was like my second mother. Gotcha. And so I had this kind of precognitive like idea that I'm a writer. Right. And then I was improbably good at chemistry. So everybody went, you should be a doctor or a chemist. And I was like, I think that I get it because I really like it. Sometimes I just read books about the periodic table and stuff because
you
I find
do?
It really interesting. Oh, yes. It's very relaxing.
OK,
but
but
I was still going, but you're a writer. And then I got involved in theater in high school. I started acting in plays. Right. And so then I wanted to be an actor. And then I thought, I was just deeply confused. And then there was this moment where I thought you could put acting and writing together and be a playwright. It seemed like ABC, you know, A plus B equals C. So I said to my mother, I was 16, and I said to my mother, I think I'd like to be a playwright. And she like went pale. There was this kind of like, what? Anyway, so then the clarity all left again for years and years and years. But it would come back in moments like, well, if you're going to be a playwright, you better start writing some plays. You know, it was sort of like sitting there.
What did you study in school?
Like undergraduate. Mm-hmm. English.
Oh,
I was an English
sense.
Major.
Yeah.
I know everybody says don't let your kids major in the humanities, and I'm like, what do you mean? It's an education.
Yeah.
So, but you kept writing.
I did. It was always kind of just something.
Because it was always there then.
Yeah.
And your mother was worried that not be the right.
I know. There was no. You know, it was Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah. And my parents are Catholic Republicans, or my mother's a Democrat now. But there was like no container for this idea. It was like it was just madness. It was an insane thing to say. Like I was 16, so it wasn't as insane as Jerry Mitchell going, I'm going to go to Broadway at five.
But
it was
still.
It was utterly peculiar.
I didn't know what Broadway was.
How did you discover it?
I have no idea.
You do now.
Movie?
I think so. I mean, we didn't ever go to theater. We didn't ever have theater to go to. That's changed now.
Well,
thank God.
You're both from the same state.
Where are you from?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Yeah.
So, and my parents weren't into the arts at all. You know, my father worked at a Coca-Cola company and then the TV station. My mother was a florist and a stay-at-home mom. So I honestly have no idea.
Television?
Where the curiosity, not really, but I remember.
What city?
Raleigh.
My sister lives there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, now it's has so much.
There's a lot going on now.
A lot happening, thank goodness.
Well, when did you go to dance school?
She made me go in elementary school.
Oh, okay.
And then I had to go to Cotillion.
Oh, of course you did.
Oh, wow.
Because of the coming out party.
I didn't have a coming out party, but I did have to learn how to
foxtrot. My friends did. It was a big thing.
I remember sometime in middle school, we very rarely went to movies, but we went and saw Music Man with Robert Preston and Shirley Jones, and I remember disappearing into the film. Mm-hmm. Literally don't remember sitting anymore. But I didn't know what to do with it until my senior year in high school when my best friend asked me to audition for the senior spring musical.
Were you singing yet?
No.
What was it?
It was Brigadoon, and I got the third lead.
And what song did you sing?
I'm not sure I had a solo. Where'd you go, Bonnie? Da, 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 da. Something like that. But I sang
it when musical people do this.
I know. Just
sing something else.
Sing.
Playwright sing.
But again, my parents, I went and they thought it was just kind of precious that I was doing a musical. But I was supposed to get married and have children and a real job. So I went to undergraduate school, and I have a degree in social work counseling, which has come in enormously.
You went to Meredith. My mom went to Meredith.
That's right.
So you went to Meredith, and that's what you majored in?
I majored in social work and counseling.
I don't think I've ever known
counseling.
This, as long as I've known you.
Why did, were you being
because there was no, I really did. There was
in terms of it being so useful.
Absolutely. You know, counseling is about listening and responding, listening, and so that's what acting is. And but I did every... I had a theater minor because there was no theater major, and I had a teacher, I had a mentor who pushed and suggested and made me uncomfortable and made me happy. Mm. Wow. And I did everything I could get my hands on until the very end when I graduated, and she said, you need to see what happens with this. And I said, I'm not moving to New York. I'm terrified. Terrified. Mm-hmm. So I went and got an MFA from the University of North Carolina, and those 2 years changed my life. And then I knew what Broadway was.
Yeah.
Wow. So did you go?
Then I went. After I got my equity card. I did an internship at a theater in Pennsylvania for 8 months and answered the phone and made costumes and struck sets and was the third sword carrier from the left in Taming of the Shrew.
Wait, which theater?
Allentown, Pennsylvania Stage Company in Allentown. In Allentown.
Oh, Allentown! Yes. I know Allentown.
Yeah. And my first musical I did in college was Applause. Oh. Remember that?
Yes. Very well.
I choreographed it, which is so ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Is there video?
Who did you play?
I choreographed it and was in the ensemble. I tried out for Bonnie and didn't get it.
I would love to get you to sing again.
You just wait when I finish my salad.
But 9 months of doing all, just doing everything.
Like, well, I feel like I paid my dues. Yeah, you know, it was one of those moments. Like when I teach a master class, I go, for musicals, I'm like, have you worked at a... theme park? Have you done dinner theater? Have you done, there's like a ship.
Have you done one of those cruise things?
Have you done a cruise things? I have not. See, now, that wasn't really that trendy when I moved to New York.
You should do that.
Well, I've sung on a cruise
dinner
ship.
Dinner theater is probably
great.
A little less common now.
Oh, yeah,
I have. You've gone on the cruise and sing.
You've sung on cruises.
Yeah. It was really fun.
Was it fun? Did you go with other people?
Like, no, just me. Your friends, just you. Me.
No, the Theater Guild before.
I have a fantasy about this, that you all go on cruises together and sing beautiful, like the best singers we've got. You know, you and Brian Stokes Mitchell and, everybody and Brooks and that you're out there on the high seas singing together.
Singing show tunes, yes. Changing lives. This particular ship I was on, not very many people spoke English, so it was kind of like, note to self.
Where did you go?
To Rome.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I mean,
aww.
Who cares? I mean, they could feel how much I love. It's called Crystal Cruises.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It was really, really, really spectacular.
Okay, so did you leave from New York and sail across the ocean?
Nope. I flew to Rome, and then we sailed out of Rome.
And then took the cruise from there.
Took the cruise from there. It was
okay,
really
and then where
amazing.
Did the cruise go?
All the way up. We went to Barcelona.
That's really what I want to know.
Where's the place with the races? The famous...
Oh,
yes, that famous.
San Sebastian. No,
more
not
famous.
That.
Monte Carlo.
Monte Carlo.
But that said, I knew I had two shows to do. So until I got through with those shows,
sure, you were
it wasn't
yourself,
really
yeah.
a vacation.
Yeah.
When that was done, it was like, whoa!
Yes, right.
Then you were like,
Yeah.
Teresa, you could go on one of those.
I could not.
Come on, sure you can.
Well,
you're too
busy. What am I going to do? No, I mean, what am I going to do? Stand up there and answer questions?
Yeah. No, because they have to. It's different now. But they still do them. You'd have one afternoon where you would sit and
Q&A. There were artists.
And your whole trip would be paid for.
Questions. I think you're making this up.
No, I'm not.
We're going to find you a cruise.
No, I'm not.
That's the goal
right?
of today's lunch.
Teresa Rebeck
absolutely.
Goes
gets
on a cruise.
I love that book.
So, that's it. That's possible. That's a real. I used to tour with the Theater Guild, and it was... the Langners, before they no longer do it.
Right.
But we would take, we'd have Patricia Munzel, Pat Munzel, Brian Bedford would do his evening of Shakespeare.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
We would take one musical comedy, singer-dancer, and we would, and Leroy Reams would do it, and we'd have our own audience, And there'd be like seven of us, and we each would have dinner. Judy Kay did it once. We would sit around, have dinner, and watch someone else's show. We'd have a two-week vacation. Everything was paid for. The only thing, we didn't get a fee.
Right, but you had a vacation.
Beautiful trip.
Right.
And watched everybody else's show. And then, so I know that feeling of when you have a show, you can't drink the night before.
You just have to behave.
But after you do your show, then, you know.
Then it's,
then we.
It's a great way to see the world.
It really is. I wish I'd done a national tour.
Oh.
You know, when I was really young, to go see the world that way. I just hear of people's experiences, but I didn't.
But you might.
I might. I'm, you know, never say never.
Never say never.
Never say never.
Yeah, national tours do seem kind of, we just were the Mean Girls national tour.
Oh, right.
I just came back from Buffalo. And the whole time I was like, maybe I should do a national tour.
Just
to see the country.
I know.
You've never done a national tour either?
I did like a really short-lived non-equity tour of Greece when I was very young.
And so you like ran around and music
It was like one-nighters across Canada.
You know,
the middle part of Canada. There's a middle part between, you know, Toronto. You have Toronto, Montreal. Mm-hmm. You have Vancouver. The middle. That was our one-nighters. Cool. It was very interesting.
But you have to be young when you do that.
It was really pretty, actually.
Yeah.
But the one-nighter thing is really hard.
Louise is?
Yes, Banff.
Yeah.
Banff.
Everyone should go to Banff. Oh.
Yeah.
Highly, highly recommend.
Well, I have to figure out my tour.
I'll tell them that maybe the tour has to go to Banff.
Or you could go on your own.
Oh, God forbid.
But a national tour is like, I'm glad I did it in my 20s because I never have to do it again.
You know? Did you do it for how long?
A year. Yeah.
A full year?
Yeah. What a funny thing. Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
That's amazing.
Where did you go?
Oh, all over. I mean,
Did you stay
Chicago?
How long were you in Chicago?
Those are the days when they used to like maybe 6 weeks.
So you had like 6 week sit downs in different big cities.
Yeah, in different big cities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That
was a great
really
education.
Ideal.
It was
Did
great.
Did you go to Marshall Fields and get the chocolate?
Yes.
Oh, what you do in Chicago?
And then State Fair. Yeah, it was great. I saw a lot, and I you know, and I love New York. I love just the more I can stay here, but I still travel a lot.
And you were young when you came to New York, right?
Yeah. And so were you.
Yeah, I was. But you were, I feel like you were.
But mine is a cautionary tale. I ran away. I mean,
you did?
You were like 16?
Yeah.
Do you know what I want to hear a cautionary tale.
I was, that sounds good.
And then what happened? She was 15.
You were 15.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But I wrote it about it. But then my father came and took me home, and then they let me go again. Well. And I never knew why. I had a job. But I think my dance teacher said, let her go and then don't send her any money and she'll come back soon. You know, she has a job, you know. And that fueled my desire to not go back and to keep working.
To prove
show
them wrong.
That,
yeah, to prove them wrong, yeah.
I'll bet.
So, but that's a strong thing to do. And the guilt, you sent me to therapy for
so
many years.
So you never went back?
No, I never did because I had good ballet training, so I was able to keep working, you know. But you know, when I teach now, if I do master classes, I don't encourage that,
right?
You know, because it was hard.
It is hard.
But I loved it. I mean, I was like, when you're that young, you're so omnipotent. You think, you know, I thought I was almost too innocent.
Yeah.
So that I scared people that they stayed away from me. You know. But I love New York, the New York experience. Now,
I'm from Ohio.
Okay, Midwestern.
Yes.
So what was it like, the New York experience, when you're from...
I'm North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Beth and I are from close to the same place.
But I came from a big city compared to...
Yeah, I came from the farm. Like, literally a
farm.
Really?
Yeah.
And you were young, Mary.
Pigs and tobacco and...
But when you...
Peaches.
But yeah. So what moved you?
I moved right after college. But my story was like, I was always interested in piano. And I asked for piano for Christmas when I was 3.
Now, how did you know that's what you wanted?
I don't know.
Did you hear music?
I could always, it was weird. I could always play the piano. Like I played in church mostly, but I could walk up to a piano and play it. It was like a language I understood. And because I played by ear,
amazing.
It just sort of made sense to me. And then I started formal lessons when I was 8, and I started playing in restaurants when I was 10.
Ten?
Yeah.
The last year, dollar bills.
It was called Abrams.
Abrams.
And it was in downtown Wilson, so it was like further away. But they had a seafood buffet on Friday and Saturday nights, so I was the pianist for that.
Wow.
Yeah. It was great, though. It made me really think about repertoire. I had to like listen to the radio more, and I like, you know, and I would.
Like
I got
baby.
Really good. I got really good at getting tips, and so.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, so it was,
I would. Boy,
right? I know. If I saw a 10-year-old kid, I'd give.
You
know.
Oh, yeah, right? Well, did you sing along?
I didn't. No, but I would. You know, it was small town, so it was regular. So I just remember everybody's favorite songs, and I would just do a medley of their favorite songs when they walked in.
Oh my God.
They would feel obligated.
That's so smart.
obligated to give me a So yeah. That was
so what prompted New York?
I sort of ran away at 16 to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to the governor's school. I did governor's school in the summer, and then I decided to go to North Carolina School of the Arts for high school, which is like a high school and a college. And I went there for high school. But because it's a high school and a college, you're basically living as a college student, really, because you're in classes with college students, and all my music classes were with college students. Some of them are who I work with now on Broadway, which I find very funny. We have a lot of, they remember me at 16. It's highly amusing. T. Oliver Reed.
Oh, yeah.
T was in my, he was in my German class.
I just did a reading with him last week.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, yeah. So we laugh about that. But yeah, so I saw a production of Baby that Lauren Ward starred in, actually. If you know Lauren, and I was 16, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to tell sort of what your epiphany of like
this
putting it to
this.
Yeah. For me, it was like music and storytelling.
Yeah,
this makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And then your first year in New York,
I mean, I worked with you in my first year in New York
with the Sweet Charity.
With Sweet Charity.
Wow.
There was a Cy Coleman was I think
my
your
big
first mentor
yeah.
here,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
And I love Cy so much. Did you know?
I didn't. I mean, we had met, but we never had the opportunity to work together.
He was amazing.
What was that? It was at Lincoln Center.
It was at Lincoln Center. It was Avery Fisher. It was a big Broadway Cares benefit.
Yes. Right.
And we had five charities, and Donna was one of them. Gwen.
Yes, yes.
It was you, Gwen,
Cheetah, Debbie
Allen, and BB.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
And I was...
royalty.
I had just moved to New York, and my goals... I was not Jerry Mitchell. I was not like, I'm going to take over Broadway and nothing's going to stop me. I was like, I'm going to move from my farmland to New York and try and get one good credit and move back down to North Carolina.
Really?
Yes, that was my big goal, was to get a credit
and
so that
leave.
I could... So that I could, like... have a career in North Carolina because I had done something in New York.
Wow.
That was my big goal.
But
you succeeded.
But
you have achieved your goal.
But the thing is, do you know this about her, that she met Paul Newman right through Cy?
Yeah, through Cy.
And you, I didn't know this, you worked administratively with Newman's Own.
Yeah, with Newman's Own.
Did that prep you for your wonderful nonprofit?
And then I started a nonprofit, yes. It was largely because of Paul Newman.
Because
largely.
I didn't know that you had that, you know,
kind
of training.
I got to spend a lot of time with him.
Oh, well,
and
wow.
Isn't that fantastic? Yeah.
I don't think it's ever come up.
Okay, well, thank you, Donna, for
sure.
Things we learn at the Ladies Who Lunch.
He was just like, my favorite thing about him is that he had this really quirky, odd sense of humor. He was very off. Like, he was his favorite thing to take his name tag and scratch out his name and write Robert Redford over it, which was hilarious. And he would tell really funny, like, sort of witty jokes. But he was so passionate about leveraging his success for... he basically just said, I feel like I've had so much luck, and it is my job to share that luck with people who did not get that luck.
Fantastic.
And so he really focused on children who had been given like a life-threatening illness. And so that was his big mission. And I got really passionate about kids, and I loved how he leveraged everything he was doing for the greater good.
Is that kind of a stepping stone for you to go to India?
It was. I went to India for... I started a nonprofit and went to India.
Yeah,
for,
tell us about it.
Yeah, it's called A-Step. It's
I know a little bit, but
almost 15 years now.
You have two careers.
I sort of have two careers, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is so fascinating. So what is the... Mm-hmm. Is it in India, the nonprofit?
We work in India. We work in India, Africa, and the U.S. And it's like creating individualized arts programming for specific groups of children that are in really dire situations. Uh-huh. So, like, in India, we have two major programs. One is in a orphanage slash boarding school for children who are lowest caste.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And it's a pretty high-level English medium education that they're getting. And then we work with Teach for India. We wrote a musical that, called Maya, which is about a girl saving the world and teaching courage, compassion, and wisdom, that's toured around the country. But we took 35 kids from slum areas outside of Pune and basically gave them a 2.5-year musical theater school, which is really
wow.
quite amusing.
And you bring people over?
We bring New York artists over, and we work in Africa with Dick Scanlon, who runs our program there. You know Dick Scanlon.
I do. I love him.
And then we have a ton of programming here in the city with refugee children, with kids in homeless shelters, with kids with incarcerated parents, with everything's sort of built around what yeah. they're up against.
It's a major organization now that you cover all
that. We're getting
that,
there, yeah.
That ground. Wow, oh, fantastic.
It's been around a while. Yeah, it's an intro. It's like having a lot of children. That's yeah. how I view it.
Because I admire the fact that I have no children. I don't even have two cats. I said, you know, kind of. But to negotiate a life, to have a life, mm-hmm. to have a family life, mm. it's something that's eluded me, but I admire it so much, especially in my women friends who are able to raise. And when Angie Schwar was on
yes.
once, you know, your friend, your different.
My girl.
You know, she said it was kind of, she married into
a family.
A family. A built
yeah.
family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were mm-hmm. like 10 and almost teenagers, right?
Right.
That was kind of shocking.
Can you imagine? She's amazing.
And she is amazing.
It's an amazing family.
So how was that? Was that ever that was just a given that you went, well, the work will take care of, you know, the family's life. The family life is here and the work. And
oh, you mean that balance?
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, I don't come from money and my husband doesn't either. And we were pretty broke. And I started getting some work in television, like in the early 90s, and I got offered NYPD Blue in the second
oh,
season,
yeah.
and I had just had a kid. I have my son, and I was like, I'm not doing another, you know, because I had done a very little bit of television show and my television work. My husband, who's a stage manager, he was like, you need to think about this. I mean, it was a great offer, and I learned a lot, and I'm really glad I did it. But I was confused because I had just had this baby. And he said, I'll stay home with the kid. You should go. And actually, it wasn't. And then he never went back to work, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I really have always had a stay. You
so
know,
you both worked it yeah. out where you could do your work.
He just turned into a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every now and then someone says to me, how do you get so much work done? I'm like, you know, I got the deal.
Yeah. That's pretty great.
I got the deal. Yeah. Because my husband is really, well, you know, stayed at home, raised the kids. I did too, you know, but it's like, I think that do you have kids?
I have two kids.
And does your husband have
my ex-husband.
You're right.
yeah. I became the breadwinner. We could
right,
see
that's what I did.
Whose path was going to support, and I was getting work. And so John decided that he would stay home, and we
yep.
moved and got a house in Jersey, and I was doing Crazy for You and Showboat and breastfeeding at the same time, but I
wow.
wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
You just make it work.
Yeah.
You just make it work. There's times when I can't be at the soccer game, but there's times when I can. And, you know, there was always a parent. There was always someone representing and, you know, loving our kids at all times.
Right.
And that's yeah. how our family works.
Yeah, and I didn't. There were a lot of things I didn't miss because when you're a writer, you're
yeah,
home
you can,
writing, and you're like, oh, it's Halloween day at the school. I get to run down to the street, and
that's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. What interests me about I'm kind of in awe of people who do that for a living, that write, that artistry, that talent, because it is you are with yourself alone, and you can do. Now, when you did television, see the facility to be able to go from mm-hmm. theater mm-hmm. to television and then film, which is a whole other animal.
And then
right?
back.
And directly, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that did you always have that ability just to write when you needed to? Or because isn't that really fast? I mean, Neil Simon, I had a great conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I loved him. Where I learned something, he said, for him, he could make changes, whole scenes, as I read a director said that about you, because of his TV writing. He said, I had the same ritual every morning. I would get up from 9 to 12. I would sit in front of the typewriter, no computers.
Sure.
And whether I wrote one word or, you know, 170 words, I would just 9 to 12 every day. And he said, and I was able to develop that. And then when I did plays, I could just, you know, nothing was precious to Neil.
Yeah, that's true.
If we were out of town and he needed a whole scene, he would just go back to the hotel, write it, and come back. Did you always have that ability to change style? Or what
I actually like that idea of not being, I'm always like, oh, you can lose that. When you reach a point where you go, oh, if there's enough good stuff, then you can kind of cut anything because there'll be plenty of good stuff left. And so you don't have to get like greedy about this is my best line I've ever written. I can't cut it. You like go, yeah, maybe it's not the best line. And maybe it's just blonde. And, you know, and a lot of times I'm like, I love cutting because it sort of energizes everything really quickly. And so I'm always like, maybe we should cut act two. And people go, okay, Teresa. I mean, that's the big warning on me when I'm in rehearsal. I'm like, you guys don't let, you know, stop me if I cut too deeply, because I tend to go, hey, look, you know, they're going, maybe we could cut these two lines. And I'm like, I could cut the whole page. And they go, no. I'm interested. I've always been interested in writing. I like every bit of it. Somebody asked me about it one time. They were like, I don't want to do the Mingy stuff. I was like, there is no Mingy stuff. I like every comma. I like when I finish, I like everything. I like punctuation. I like semicolons. I like.
Please bring it back. Punctuation.
I'm not as good on internet stuff, but I do this thing like when I finish a play, I'm not allowed to make a title page until I get to the end, and then I go and I find a font. I get to like pick fonts and how big do you want it. It's, you know, I like all of it.
You make it fun.
Oh, it's really, I love it. Which most people, they're like, you like writing, you know, but most people, or a lot of people, feel more like Dorothy Parker, who's famously said, I hate writing, but I love having written. And I'm like, I don't know, I think it's kind of fun. I will say, however, I've gotten to a point in my career, because I started directing.
Yeah,
I'm like, I really don't want to go back to like just being at home writing and then handing off the thing and just showing up while everybody else is having all the fun.
Wanted to know about the film, the Trouble. I saw bits of it, and was that your first direction?
I made a short movie, and then I also made a movie. Like, we shot it in 8 days. That was fun. based on one of my plays, and it's Poor Behavior, and I like that a lot. Right. I think that one came out really well. I'm interested in filmmaking, sure, for sure.
But if you're writing, it's wonderful to be able to, but not so much with plays.
I've been directing a lot for the theater, and then I direct my own plays, and people, you know, and it always comes out great. I get great reviews. I mean, you should get reviews this good for it, you know, and people are still flipped out by it. I'm like,
unusual.
A lot of people are stepping out of their lanes right now, as we should. It's like, you know, and I think that partially because I wrote this play about Sarah Bernhardt, who did everything. You know, she owned the theater, she directed that. I mean, she was one of those people like Henry Irving, you know, they were like actor managers, and they did everything. And this idea that playwrights cannot also direct, I think, was invented at some point. I don't know who invented it, but there's a lot of really interesting work coming along now from many different ways of creating work. And I think that we should all relax and let me direct.
Yes.
That's what I think.
Totally.
Because I don't want to direct everything.
I mean, it makes
sense.
But
I'm just like, you know, sometimes.
But that was historically, you know, I always heard that.
Shakespeare directed his own stuff. Shakespeare would star it, and Molière too. They wrote it, they started it. There's some great stuff. Great historic stuff that was written by playwrights who were acting and directing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I just don't, it's been, you know, look, we're women in the theater. It's a complicated road, you know? And like, there was always like moments when I would find like, well, what are you going to do now? And honestly, part of the reason I started directing is because there's such a limited pool of directors, and it became sort of, I feel like it was a way of disempowering playwrights where you've got to wait for what, you know, and you have to like,
for somebody free,
and or they, you know, how do they, I mean, I just thought, I I'm not interested in waiting.
I'll do it.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a little like,
I have the perfect director.
Right.
No, it's great. And you love it. You love it.
I do.
Because it's your point of view and you can...
Yeah, it cuts through a lot of, you know, there's a lot of politics that you, sure, like, sort of just shove aside.
But also, you seem like, I mean, as an artist, you have objectivity about your work, so you're not going to shoot yourself in the foot because of
ego. I wouldn't recommend it for everybody. I mean, no. I know some writers who the idea of talking to an actor, like, makes them go, because you really do. I would say, for me, it's very careful. You have to be very specific and clear and respectful when you talk to your actors.
Thank you.
And you need to listen to them and, you know, and be in collaboration with them. You know what I mean? And I really did get a lot of training. I went to Brandeis where they had you do everything. You know,
that's
we were
great.
Doing all these, it was like what you said about that 9 months.
I'm so glad. I know. All that stuff.
It was so fun. But I do feel like a lot of writers don't have that training where it's like, no, you can't say that to that actor right now. You have to let them, you know, and every now and then there's a bump and there, you know, but mostly there are always bumps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Congratulations. That's great.
Thanks.
I learned something.
Absolutely.
What, that we should all be doing whatever?
Yeah, just,
yeah.
Don't
all be sharing these joints.
Yes, absolutely. So I want to be, are we good? I'm having so much fun. I have to continue, because there's something I want to ask about, you know, I just saw an interview, and I don't want to bring up any negativity, but I got a review in the Times once that devastated me so much. That I was in a depression for a whole year, and I just watched one interview that you did. You mentioned something like that, and I thought, this was a while ago. But
yeah, it was
We're living in a different communication age now, and things are changing. And you know, a play could close on just one person's subjective feeling, and or a person's performance could be, you know, a person's psyche could be damaged. But it's changing, though. I mean, it's not the same as it was, right? I mean, we're being reviewed, but we're being...
I don't read them.
It's more word of mouth.
I don't read them either.
I just don't.
Yeah. But yeah, but word of mouth spreads more on the internet.
It's everywhere.
And so it is finally, you know, the thing that we've all been yearning for is that it's more of a discussion, like as goes on in England, in London, where there are like 10 critics and it's like things are in discussion.
Right.
I feel like that's really starting to take hold. And I mean, I do feel like people still clutch around that Times review. And I'm glad when people get less clutchy around it because it really is still, they're doing their job, we're doing our job. It shouldn't be so like Nero-like.
Right.
That's just never, that's an unhealthy business model.
Yeah.
So my friend John Walker, he's a producer. He produced The Incredibles movie. I was like, my friend produced The Incredibles. But before that, he was the managing director of Victory Gardens in Chicago. And he told me one time, he was like, you know, you can sit anytime, because he saw so much theater. He did it for 17 years. He said, the lights come up every single show. Like one person over here thinks this thing, one thing over here thinks something else. That there is never a uniform response, ever. In 17 years, he never saw a uniform response. And so he said, the idea that one voice has that much power is like, just inaccurate. And that, you know, and I'm like, I know, man, we've all sat around and tried to figure out how to come up with a better business model or something that more accurately supports and celebrates what we do.
A story sometimes that I tell my students when I was teaching, I use it as a kind of a tool for exactly this subject. When I was doing the workshop of Chorus Line, I loved it because it was safe, it was insular. We were just putting on this show, and it was nobody knew that it would be commercial at all. But when it started growing and there was interest, I had a panic attack because the year before, that's when I got the bad review. And I remember going to Michael Bennett and saying, And I was trembling and on the verge of tears. And I said, I can't do this. I can't do this because I'm going to ruin the show for you. Because Clive Barnes at the New York Times hates me. And it's just, I just can't do it. He said, what? What are you talking about? He said, hold on, get in the other room, get on this phone. He got on the phone and he called Clive Barnes.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm listening.
Oh my gosh.
And
I'm still, gosh.
And he said, I have a girl here, a dancer in my show, who says that she wants to pull out because you hate her and she's afraid that she's going to ruin the show. Is that true? And I'm going, yes, and the answer is. And he said, well, who are you talking about? He mentioned my name, and he said, oh, no, I love her, I love her. I just thought that she wasn't up to par in that show, that's all. Oh, it's fine.
Wow.
And I'm listening to this, and I had been torturing myself
for a year.
And it meant nothing.
I love Michael Bennett, and I love that story.
Isn't that great?
I never heard that story.
Yeah, no.
Oh, it's amazing.
But it was, and then it was fine. It was all fine. But he...
Yeah, you need it kind of diffused for your imagination or something. Because I can't read them. But there was one critic who's, like, been rough on me, and who I finally had a friend of mine go, and I was like, okay, can you read this thing? Because I can't. And she was like, no, it's kind of good. It's good. It's so good. He's saying, like, good things. And then he went, okay, it's a little snarky. I was like, snarky, what snarky? And I went, don't tell me what it's... I mean, it was totally neurotic. And then she went, okay, he's a little snarky about the second act. And I said, okay, what does he say? Because I just thought, just get it over with. Stop acting like this. And she said, overly ambitious. And I was like, oh, I'll take overly ambitious. But, you know, and that's really also, though, where you go... And that's something you throw at a woman. I mean, I'm like, nobody ever said that Angels in America was overly ambitious, which it is, because as magnificent as it is, there's big chunks of it that actually don't work. And nobody talks about that because they just acknowledge that it's the master. But they do. They kind of like when a woman's overly ambitious, you hear. You're a little overly ambitious. Makes it into print.
So then you have to translate all those.
But
videos.
I liked it. I was sort of like overly ambitious. I am overly ambitious. I like that.
It's good. I'm ambitious now. Nothing wrong with that. I'm inspired.
Are you overly ambitious? I would hope so. You're changing the world.
Yeah, these days I am.
I think you're the most ambitious.
So you haven't eaten a thing, but you're going to get that to go.
I am so getting this to go. Thank you. Sorry.
But what's around the corner? I know. I just want to, before we leave each other, I just want to, you know, talk about your, do it, Seared.
I have a play that's going to start previews in 2 days at Manhattan Class Company. That's called Seared, and it's starring Raul Esparza and Krista Rodriguez, and then two lesser-known but equally, like, wonderful actors, Dave Mason and Trey Davis.
Right.
So,
great.
And it's directed by Moritz von Stolpnagel, who I also did Bernhard Hamlet with. We work well together. If I'm going to have somebody else direct my plays, I prefer it to be him.
That's great.
Yeah.
Those relationships
are
so important.
Yeah, those relationships are great.
You build them over time.
Yeah.
And for you, Mary Mitchell, you're
Kristen Chenoweth and I are about to do a Broadway run at the Nederlander in November for her new album, which we've been doing press for the last couple of days.
So yeah, yeah.
We've had the early morning TV shows, like, yesterday and today, which is...
That's exciting.
It's fun. Yeah, it's fun.
Can I come?
Sure.
How do you get in? Do you just buy a ticket? Or is this like
to the Nederlander thing?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you just buy a ticket.
Well, you know, but, I didn't know if it was like it sounded like maybe it's.
No, it's not a private thing.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a limited engagement.
It's a limited engagement though.
How long is it?
2 weeks. Over 2 weeks, yeah. And then what else am I doing? I'm doing Cyrano, down at off Broadway at the Daryl Roth with Peter Dinklage, and the band The National.
Wrote
the music.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's them. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Now I will.
But now you will.
Thank
They're
you.
They're from Ohio. Originally.
And now you're singing and dancing every day again to get ready for...
What?
You have a show coming up at 54 Below?
I do. I have a new show.
13
and counting. I don't know. I haven't decided on the title yet because, it's in January. So until then, I'm going to New Orleans next week to do a concert. Then I'm going to San Francisco. And then I'm doing a master class. And then I'm going to Virginia to do
a... Now you're traveling.
Yeah, I'm just traveling.
So you're traveling.
We'll see what happens next.
Okay. That sounds great.
It is. I love. I don't know about you, but when I teach or do master classes, it just fills my soul. It's like, just to be in the oxygen.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, it lifts me and I can come back. I call it the children I never had.
All the mothering, you know, the nurturing goes into an important place. You know? Yeah. And you too, right?
Yeah, similarly, yeah. Yeah, exactly. The children I did not have.
Well, thank you again for being here. Wow, this was just a great...
I love meeting you.
I know.
I know, it's really fun to meet you.
Yes, and we're so stuck with each other now.
I know, I get them. But I also think, I never get to meet the musical people. Because
and I never get to meet the play people.
Yeah. So it's great. Thank you, Donna, for bringing
us. Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And you've got two music people.
Dori Berenstein, our wonderful producer.
Yay, Dori.
I'm talking about you.
And a great crew. I just want to thank them. So I like to pretend this is champagne.
Yes, please. Great.
And cheers to you. Cheers. Good luck and best to everybody. Lots of love.
Cheers.
Good luck.
Thanks for bringing us together.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ladies who lunch.
Cheers.
And who storytell?
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.